You're listening to KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. I honestly love Olivia Newton-John. In addition to being one of the greatest singers of all time, with a slew of hits including Suspended in Time and Have You Never Been Mellow and Physical and Make a Move on Me, Olivia Newton-John is the star of great films like Grease and the now-revered Xanadu. And she's the author of several books, and her latest is a memoir, Olivia Newton-John, Don't Stop Believin'. Olivia Newton-John, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much. How are you, Gary?
I'm great. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to thank you for writing your book. I think your experiences with cancer will be enormously helpful to people. And I don't mean just cancer patients, but I think everyone. I really appreciated how you described why you wanted the word wellness added to the name of the cancer center named for you.
Yeah, so it was really important to me because I think, you know, when you hear the word cancer and they tell you that you have cancer, obviously it's very frightening. But if you're going to have therapy and you go to the hospital and you see the word wellness next to cancer, it gives you hope that you can get there, you can achieve that. And I think that's really important. It's a hopeful thing and a very positive thing.
And, you know, I think I felt that in your book. It's a very positive and marvelous book. Just judging from your picture on there, you look so fantastic in it.
Thank you.
Last year, there was an album by Juliana Hatfield. She's one of those indie rock.
Right. Oh, I know her. Yeah, she did it on my song.
Yeah, she did. I recorded an album of your songs.
That was very sweet. Yeah. Very surprising by someone like her, but it was very sweet.
Do you like the record?
Yes, I haven't heard all of it, but I've heard a few tracks, and I thought they were really fun.
It's weird for somebody to do all of your songs.
It was a different thing to do, but I think it's lovely that she did that.
Well, I of course, have some favorite Olivia Newton-John albums. My favorite is Soul Kiss, and I just love staring at that album cover when I'm listening to you. In fact, I have to be honest, I stare at that cover of Soul Kiss no matter what album I'm listening to.
You're funny. Is that the one with my curly hair in black and white?
Yeah.
Oh, that was Helmut Newton. And Helmut Newton, do you know who he is?
I do. Great photographer.
Yeah, very famous photographer. He was actually a friend of my father's, and he took photographs of my sister when she was 16, when she first became a model. So he was a family friend. And I remember doing that album shoot, and I never felt quite comfortable with that. It's funny. But now I look back, I really appreciate the photos.
Well, so I wonder, you had some trepidation at the time about posing in this way.
For those five
people who haven't seen it, you're standing on the back with your riding pants on and your crop.
And a crop.
But you forgot your shirt. You don't have your shirt on.
That's right. And I was Heidi Klum actually copied that photo for something years ago. So I thought, oh, well, that's cool.
No, I think that's very artistic. I thought it was great when it came out. When I worked at a record store then, and we unboxed it, and we said, "This is Olivia Newton-John."
It was my bold days, yeah. The bold old days.
Now, in your book, one of the things I love in your book was we talked about Karen Carpenter, and you had some really warm thoughts about her, and you described your friendship. And you also mentioned John Denver, another of the stars who's passed away. But I wonder if, you know, I know you performed with John Denver and he wrote one of your first hits. Do you remember meeting him?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I had my first Thanksgiving with John and Annie when he was married to Annie.
Right.
And he was a dear friend to me, and he had me on his special in Aspen, and we spent some time together. He was a lovely man, so, so gifted. What an amazing songwriter and singer.
And you got along well?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I love that. There's a video of you performing Fly Away, I think it is, on one of his TV specials.
Yeah.
It's so great.
He was wonderful.
Do you still ride, I wonder?
Ride? No, not for the last year anyway.
Yes, the horses on the back of your album, they look too small to ride.
Yeah, they're miniatures. miniature horses. I don't know if you've read the book yet, but
yes, I have.
I talk about how, you know, now I have to be satisfied with miniature horses and table tennis. and that's fine.
No more real tennis, no more riding around. But horses and animals have always been an important part of your life.
Oh, absolutely. Love animals. And, they're just so loving, unconditional love and fun and being in the moment. And they're just a constant reminder. You know, a dog is God backwards, so not perfect.
Oh, I think this is a wonderful book. What made you decide to write your memoir now?
It was interesting because I had no real plans to write a book, but then I heard that they were doing a movie of my life in Australia, and I wasn't involved in the making of it, and I didn't really like the idea, so I thought, I better write a book because I don't know what they're going to say or how they're going to interpret, you know, my life. So that was the inspiration, and I'm glad because it got me going, and then the movie turned out to be fine. Delta Goodrum, who's a dear friend of mine, played me. And I didn't watch it yet because I can't watch myself or things about myself, but I hear it was fine. But at least it inspired the book.
Now, on the cover of your book, you are in the exact pose and wearing pretty much the exact clothes as on your album, If You Love Me, Let Me Know.
Right. Wasn't planned that way, but that's how it ended up.
Really? It's just a coincidence?
Yeah, really, because I was doing a photo shoot for a magazine. And those clothes were given to me by the magazine, and then when we were looking for a photo for the book, originally it was going to be one with the little horses, but everyone preferred the one in the denim shirt, and I didn't really realize until later how similar they were.
Oh, I mean the tree is in the same spot.
And... Oh, is it really? Oh, wow.
I thought, oh, that's so clever that she's done her album.
Trees have a way of doing that, don't they?
Let's talk a little bit about Greece. You spend quite a bit of time in your book talking about it, especially the pants. Now, describe for my listeners how you got those pants on and off.
Well, those pants were old already because we filmed the movie in the 70s, and the pants were from the 50s, so they're already 20-something years old, and the zip was broken. So rather than try and fix them because we were concerned it might damage the fabric, they just stitched me in. And so that was challenging on a hot day. what I'm excited about is I'm going to be auctioning off the pants and the jacket for my hospital.
Oh, when will that take place?
Yeah, sometime this year we're doing a big auction, so I'm very excited about that.
Well, that should draw millions of dollars for that.
That's what I'm hoping, yep.
Won't you miss having the pants and the jacket around? I mean, imagine you put them on from time to time and dance.
No, I don't. I don't want to know. well, the jacket, yes, but the pants, I'm not so sure. No, I think I'll be very happy knowing that somebody has them that really wanted them, and more importantly, that the money is raised for my wellness programs at my hospital. So that's what I want it for.
Olivia Newton-John, you haven't been performing in recent months. Do you plan to perform again soon or act in films again?
I don't really know, and I don't know that I'll perform again. Not sure now because I've taken 6 months off since I had my fractured pelvis, so I had to learn to walk again, and a walker and then a cane, and now I'm walking without, but I've had time to just be home and be with my family and my animals, and I'm not sure about concerts anymore. I have to really think deeply about that, so I'm just taking more time off right now and loving it.
What about recording? You think you'll make a new record?
Don't know. I don't know yet.
You are a songwriter and a really fine songwriter, although most of your hits were written by other people.
But yeah, thank you.
Do you have a lot of songs that are rattling around in your head?
I have a few that I've had for years and years and years and never been able to finish, so I would like to finish them. But I'm not sure about a project. If I did any kind of project singing, I would probably do something with my daughter because we've talked about doing that. We'd had one hit record together, a disco song, but she has a lovely voice and... So we have talked about it, but I'm not sure.
You know, when you were a star, not that you're not a star now, but I mean, when you rose to fame in the 1970s, it was a period of time when most of the rock stars did a lot of cocaine and ran around. And, but you never partook?
No, I wasn't interested in drugs. I'd see it around me, but it wasn't anything I was interested in. And, no, I wasn't part of that culture. now I use a lot of cannabis for my pain and sleep and inflammation. My husband grows it and makes it for me.
And is it working for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely amazing. And it also helped me because I was on, they gave me morphine when I was in a lot of pain in hospital. And opiates are very hard to get off, as you, I'm sure you know.
Sure.
And the cannabis has helped me wean off the morphine. So I'm very, very grateful to cannabis. And I think that there's been a lot of talk about it, and I'm living proof that it works to wean off a dangerous drugs with something that's safe.
So you're fully in favor of the legalization of marijuana?
I am, yes. Particularly for, you know, people who are in pain and suffering and, you know, whatever reason, that you're not going to die from it, whereas you die from these opiate drugs and these prescription medicines. And there's been no recording in history of anyone dying from cannabis. So we all have a cannabidiol, we have a body inside us that relates to that, to cannabis. It's been with us for centuries. So it's an important thing, and there are thousands of papers now on research as to what it can do for epilepsy, for Parkinson's, for glaucoma, all kinds of things. It's helping with so many things. We haven't even scratched the surface of the wonders of this plant and the different strains. So I'm obviously an advocate.
Oh, do you think you're, was there any rock and roll peer pressure from your contemporaries back in the day?
Oh, to smoke cannabis? Not really. I mean, it was around me too, but I wasn't that interested. And I tried it a few times in my youth, but didn't really like it. So it isn't something that I have used in my life until this time, and until I was married to John, who's a plant medicine man and understands the healing benefits and the medicinal benefits of it. So I've got to really appreciate it and watched it grow in our own little greenhouse and watch my husband make it for me. So I'm very grateful to it.
And you identify, even though you were born in England, you definitely identify as being Australian.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you're an Aussie.
I sound like one, don't I? Yeah,
you do. You do. Did you have a British accent when you got there?
Well, when I was five and I got to Australia, I don't really know what kind of accent. I think you're still forming at that point. So I think I picked up the Aussie accent pretty quickly. My sister, however, because she was older,
yeah,
she remained with an English accent all her life because she was, you know, she left England later in her life.
Well, another album I want to ask you about, because I've got all your albums sitting here looking at them, is Physical. Now, was there some trepidation on your part about doing that song or that album?
You know, when I first recorded Physical, I just thought it was a great song. And then after I'd recorded it with John Farah and Steve Kepner, both really great friends of mine, I kind of panicked a little bit and thought I'd gone too far and called my manager and said, "Hey, I think I've gone too far. We've got to pull this song." He said, "It's too late. It's gone to radio." And, of course, it went on to be one of my biggest hits in my life. And I was banned, which now I see as a badge of honor, but at the time it wasn't. It was embarrassing. but, you know, at that time, I said, "Well, we better do a video, I think, because then we do a video about exercise. It's going to take the onus off the other thing." Well, of course, it just made it bigger. And just
nobody was fooled, Olivia.
No, it makes me laugh, though, when I think about it.
It was one of your biggest hits. But not, you know, when you listen to all of your music, it's not so much a departure. I think it was just the idea that you were getting physical.
Yeah, I know. It was a little raunchy at the time, but compared to what's on the radio now, it's kind of like a lullaby, is what I say.
You worked with one of my idols, Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Oh, he was lovely. He, you know, he's a gentleman. He was incredibly brilliant, of course, and the fact that I danced his last dance with him is pretty amazing for me.
Was he a nice guy?
Yeah, lovely. Lovely man.
No, I know he really was he really wanted to perfect his dances and so on. Did he drive you hard in rehearsal?
Yeah, he did. We rehearsed a lot, and then when we filmed that sequence, he only wanted the cameraman, the lighting and sound. He didn't want a set full of people. And he directed that segment himself, and he didn't want the director there, and just the choreographer and the key people that needed to be in the in the room. So it was private, which is great for me because it was a little scary to dance with him, as you can imagine.
I can kind of imagine.
Yeah.
This book is a marvelous book. It's called Don't Stop Believing. Olivia Newton-John. I don't do I say it Olivia Newton-John, Don't Stop Believing, or Don't Stop Believing?
Yeah, either way. Oh, Don't Stop Believing In.
And I want to thank you for writing it. It's, I think it's a very brave book.
Thank you. It was a very interesting journey. You know, a lot of things, I mean, I wrote about things I remember, a lot of things I don't, I guess, because I thought of stories later that I went, I forgot that one. But I think I picked out the ones that I thought people would want to know about. And that's the beauty of writing your own book. You get a choice of what you put in there or not.
Maybe the cannabis is affecting your memory.
No, I think it helps it.
Well, it's just been a real thrill for me to talk to you. Thank you so much for being my guest on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much. Take care.
There was a time when I was in a hurry as you are. I was like you. There was a day when I just had to tell my point of view.
Olivia Newton-John. Her new book is called Don't Stop Believing. I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. When we return to the show after a break, Belinda Carlisle is my guest. Don't go away. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. I'm Gary Shapiro. A few years ago, Belinda Carlisle wrote her memoir, Lips Unsealed. It told the unvarnished story of her rock and roll life with the rock band The Go-Go's, she was the lead singer, and her international stardom as a solo artist, complete with drugs, sex, and other excesses. I asked Belinda Carlisle why she decided to suddenly unseal her lips.
Well, I mean, I always knew that I had an extraordinary life and that I had a book in me, but I always felt that I wanted to reach the age of 50 anyway to do that, because I felt like I would finally have something to say, or hopefully something to say, and little did I know really what that would be. I think for me, I wanted to, like I said, I always wanted to write a book. I wanted to do something that I thought could be inspiring to people, you know, because I have overcome obstacles. It's a story about addiction and making changes late in life, and I thought, you know, on top of being a little bit of dirty laundry, that it could also be helpful to some people out there, and the response that I've gotten has been amazing from people who are, you know, who are having personal struggles. So it was all worth it.
Well, you weren't always totally alone in your exploits that you depict in your memoir, Lips Unsealed. So has anyone, other than the public that loved the book, have people objected to your honesty where they're concerned?
No, I mean, no one said anything. Believe me, I think, in fact, I was very, very careful never to reveal anything really about any of the members of my band, because, you know, that's left to them if they ever want to do that. So I was very, very careful. And I don't think any of the stories are that particularly scandalous where it would offend anybody. So, you know, I mean, I was really comfortable with everything I put in there. Anything I was uncomfortable with, I left out. So, and also I've never gotten any sort of negative feedback from anybody. So, you know, I did the best I could, and it was all honest. So,
but now you're saying that you've edited. I mean, it's, that's a frightening thought. Belinda Carlisle.
Excuse me?
I say that's a frightening thought, that maybe you edited some stuff out.
Oh, well, if I wrote everything. I'd probably get my own reality show in about 10 seconds. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about that. You know, you also recorded your memoir as an audiobook. Was it harder to say some of the things out loud about yourself than to write them?
Oh, my God. That was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Because I'm quick anyway, and I go fast, and you know, to have to slow down and enunciate and read your own stuff. I mean, actually, it was an abridged version of the book, so I was like, what about this part? What about this part? So I didn't get a chance to really go through the abridged version, and you know, it was interesting for me, and. You know, it was weird because after I finished writing the book, it was really, really hard for me to go back and read it. And I had to, you know, a couple of times for proofreading and just to make sure that facts were correct and that I was clear on things. And I still, I mean, I need to pick it up again for other reasons, and I'm still really hesitant to do that. Although I'm proud, it's not the easiest thing. It's a weird, weird, weird feeling.
It's a weird feeling to say the things out loud.
Or it just is to weird have to the say book the things that, out loud, and it's weird reading your own book out loud. Yes.
Yeah. And of course, now it's out there. It won't go away. Which kind of makes me think about your. Did you ever think? Maybe you probably did. You probably considered this, but like at the time that you posed for Playboy, did it ever occur to you that forevermore, when people Google you, that they'll see you naked?
Well, I just figure that, you know, today's news is on the bottom of the birdcage tomorrow. So, I mean, people forget about things pretty quickly. Anything I've ever done, I may have had like a little bit of a tinge of remorse after writing the book, and I was like, oh my God, everybody's going to read about my laundry. But like I said, there's nothing in there that's too uncomfortable for me. The Playboy thing, no, I never regretted that at all in a minute. So anything I've ever done, I've always been pretty sure about. It's too late now anyway.
Yeah, you may change your mind.
Way too late.
You may change your mind and I have to recall all copies.
I can't change my mind now. I can't go back.
No, you say you waited until you're 50, but you don't mean to say that you're done, right? I mean, you're still in the middle of your career, right? Or do you feel like you're done?
I'm extremely busy all the time, and I'm really lucky. And as little as I want, or as much as I want, and you know, I'm recording again in the fall. I did a French album a couple of years ago that did really well. So I mean, I do stuff that's sort of out of the norm now. I can afford to do that, which is great. So I can get my creative, you know, thingies out, you know, whatever that is, and really kind of express where I'm at the time. So it's kind of cool, and get to make a living at doing something that I love. But I'm, you know, I think I'm going to take a year off from everything in next summer, and just because I haven't done that really since ever, and I've always been really lucky to be really busy.
Your book talks a lot about addiction and your struggles with it. Do you feel that not being busy is worse than being busy in terms of the temptations? I mean, do you think you're completely cured and you'll never worry about it again, or is it always kind of there?
Well, I don't think, for me, I know what you're saying, and it's, you know, we love to be distracted from ourselves, you know, and our minds and whatever we have going on that might be negative. I don't need to be busy to distract myself, to keep myself busy, so I don't drink or use. Miraculously, that obsession has been totally lifted, and it's so off my radar. I don't even think about it at all. So, you know, I think at first, when I first became sober, I had a problem with that. My days were so jam-packed full of stuff. And I think as time went along, that now I'm almost a little bit lazy, which is great. And I've never been a little bit lazy. So and now I want to take a year off. So, you know, I don't need to distract me from myself at all anymore.
We're chatting with Belinda Carlisle, and she's got a memoir, and it's called Lips Unsealed. Do you think all of the addictions and things are all connected? That, you know, eating, smoking, drugs, drinking, they're all part of the same thing?
Well, it's all trying to fill up that same hole in the soul. And, yeah, it comes from the same place. You know, I mean, I can't speak for anybody else but for myself, but I know for me, that's the case. And I would think that for most people that who've gone through addiction and the 12 steps that they would probably pretty much agree. But there might be people out there that disagree. So, but it's, for me, the eating, it was all the same place. If I had done, you know, my step work to begin with in the first place, back in when I sort of dabbled in a 12-step program back in 1985, maybe I wouldn't have gone through the whole eating, you know, disorders and you know, shopping is a part of that too, you know, but it all comes from the same hole.
Shopping, buying stuff. yeah, no, I totally understand that. So do you have to temper all of them? I mean, you have to have them all under control.
Well, it's not even about controlling it, because those, you know, addictions unless you are an addict, I don't know if anybody can possibly understand, but you can't control addiction. You just have to kind of surrender to it and just deal with it and accept it and then move on. And it's not something that I struggle with every day. I mean, you know, I think the isms that come along with alcoholism they call it isms, and alcoholics and addicts have a certain way of thinking and a certain thought pattern, and that's the sort of thing that I have to really keep an eye on is my mental state and just to make sure that I'm emotionally healthy, and I have to really just keep tabs on that, and that's I guess if I was going to have any sort of struggle or any sort of something that I really have to watch, it would be that, and an addict and or an alcoholic or somebody with that, so my sort of problems would understand that.
Well, we're talking with Belinda Carlisle. You mentioned a minute ago your most recent album, Voila, in which you sing some lovely French songs, and it's a wonderful record. Brian Eno's on there, some great musicians working with you.
Thanks.
It's kind of a far cry from the punk scene in L.A. and San Francisco in the days when you formed the Go-Go's. Your journey from punk to pop kind of seems to have started the minute that you were recorded for a major label. Our Lips Are Sealed is an undeniable classic, but it's also undeniably, you know, not punk. How did that transition happen for you from going from the punk scene to pop music?
Well, I think the Go-Go's were always a pop band. We just came from the punk scene. And even our early melodies were more along the lines of the Buzzcocks and some of the more poppy punk bands. But, you know, the thing is with the punk scene, I mean, it enabled bands to get up on stage and not really know how to do a thing. And with the Go-Go's, we started from nothing. So, in the beginning, you know, because we couldn't play our instruments and just thrash things out with no subtleties, it sounded like hardcore punk music. But then as we started becoming more musically proficient, people started realizing that, oh, they're not a punk band, they're a pop band. And we were kind of uncool in some circles, and even in the punk scene. But as we practiced and went along, there were definitely pop songs with a punk edge. And for me, in my career, it's always kind of been a natural progression. And with the Go-Go's going into my solo career, I've grown up. It kind of went back to the songs I grew up with, listening to the radio and hearing like Three Degrees and all those sort of overproduced dramatic pop songs, which I loved. And so it's kind of, those songs are kind of a throwback to that. And it kind of came around nicely to me with the Chanteuse album, the last album I did. And for some reason, it just seemed like the next natural thing to do is just to do something completely wacky like that. But in some ways, it made a lot of sense. And it seemed like the next step. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but it made perfect sense to me.
des yeux qui font passer les miens, un rire qui se perce sur sa bouche. Voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel je partiens.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're listening to my interview with Belinda Carlisle, author of a memoir called Lips Unsealed. She was the lead singer of the Go-Go's. Belinda Carlisle, tell us about your time with the Go-Go's. Was it fun? Was it as much fun as you thought it would be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 99.9% of my memories of that band are good memories. And, you know, we all had incredible life experiences. And there's nothing, you know, that I would change, except for maybe, I think if we had learned to say no in the beginning, because we were so overworked, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for us, that maybe we would be around a little bit longer. But I think, you know, only a little bit. I think that it all went perfectly in the way it was supposed to go.
Well, there are, you know, it seems like every European country has their own Belinda Carlisle Greatest Hits collection. There's like a thousand of them. There's like in Belgium, there's a three CD set of Best of Belinda. Do you tour all over the place in Europe? Or are you why do you have such a huge following over there? Not that you're not
because the record companies love milking it every way they can. It's not, believe me, if I had my way, it would not be like that, because it's record companies and trying to make, especially in this day and age, trying to make as much money as they can, squeezing it out of every artist. So, but that being said, I do work a lot in Europe, and I've been living in France for 18 years. I'm between France and India actually now. So, sometimes I haven't worked in the States much this year. In fact, I don't think I have. Thinking back, I haven't. I'm going to New York today, though, actually, to go do a show next week. So, but as far as I work mostly here on this side of the planet.
Yeah, and in your book, you do kind of leave open the possibility of another reunion with the Go-Go's. What is your relationship like with the core members of the group?
Well, we broke up. I mean, we were supposed to go on our farewell tour last month, and then Jane injured herself when she was hiking, so we had to cancel. So we're pretty much broken up. I think that for me, I mean, everybody has different opinions in the band of when the band should end. For me, I'd like to go out with a little bit of dignity and not just hash it out and be pathetic. So for me, it's kind of, I always saw 50 as being the time for me that I would just, that was it for me as far as being a Go-Go. Yeah, the girls might argue with me, and in fact, I know they would. But we're like sisters, and you know, there are times when we don't speak to each other, and times that we do. And I think we were put into each other's lives for karmic reasons. It's just been the strangest relationship that's gone on for 33 years. So we know each other better than our husbands know us, and I think we'll always, I know we'll always be in each other's lives, even though we might not be making music together.
The years went by pretty quickly, now that when you say that, because it just seems like the other day that your Our Lips Are Sealed came out. But do you, you know, you have this fabulous solo career, and it's been going really well all these years, and some of the band members don't. So is there pressure from them? I mean, do you think they're probably over it now, but did they resent you at some point for being so successful?
Well, I think everybody, you know, everybody's sort of responsible for their own lives. And you know, I mean, of course there's pressure on me to work, but I also put my family first before anything. And it just happens that I live on the other side of the world. So, but they're pretty understanding about that. And I, you know, I've always been totally upfront and totally honest about my work intentions. And they probably don't agree with it a lot of the time. In fact, I know that they don't. Like I said, it's, you know, that's just the way it is. And but we all have our own lives and we all have our own obligations. So that's kind of how my attitude's always been with the band, you know, and definitely my family comes first before anything.
Well, and you write a lot about your family and your son particularly, and your son, his decision to reveal to you that he was gay, and that was kind of a cathartic moment in your family. You want to comment?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I always had my suspicions, but I mean, it was weird. I mean, and most of my friends, I think 90% of my friends are gay and lesbian. So, but when it's your own child, it's still pretty shocking. Even if you kind of figure that that's, you know, that he probably is or gay anyway. So, I can't really explain it. Wouldn't want it any other way. And, you know, for me, the biggest issue was how I was going to tell my husband, because I didn't really feel that my son should, because in case my husband had a bad reaction, I didn't want my son to have to live with that. So it took me a good 4 months to finally tell him and to have to carry that secret. But
how did you do that? Didn't you want to just run home right then and say, oh my God, I have to talk to you?
Oh, I was, it was torture for me to have to keep it, but I wanted to, like, I had to think about it. First of all, I had to digest it myself, which took a little while. And then I, you know, had to go, okay, so, you know, even though I know that, you know, being gay is a genetic thing, you know, I mean, sometimes it might be conditioning, but for the most part it is, you know, it's a genetic thing. But I still had to go to my shrink and say, what have I done? You know, is it me? Is it because he hates me? You know, and I know that's not the case, but you know, you go through all those kind of all those stages. And then when you know, I tell my husband, I mean, that was like, you know, my husband is very gay friendly, and you know, but still I think sometimes for some men it might be a reflection on their masculinity. So, you know, I was very careful with that. It was a hard secret to keep, and you know, it took my husband a good year to come to terms with it. But now I know he wouldn't want it any other way. And if my son wants to have grandchildren or children, he can have children. It's, you know, being gay isn't going to stop him.
Yeah.
So
yeah, certainly, of course. Your book also has some talk about your spiritual journey. And do you feel now that you're a more spiritual person than you ever were before?
I think that I definitely am. I have I have a big spiritual base from that I work my life from, and I'm really, really lucky that I have that, and I feel I can't live my life any other way, and that's part of the program. It's part of my own belief system. And it's a big, big, big part of me now. And I think, you know, I mean, I'm Nichiren Buddhist. I've been chanting probably for about 6 years. But I think since I spend a lot of time in India, I have some great teachers there. And for me now, I've kind of made a mishmash of my own kind of, spirituality and, you know, it works for me. So, and I think, you know, it's all individual. I mean, some people feel comfort in churches and whatever, and that's good too. But for me, it's all inside.
Do you think you could define or not what you believe?
Oh, well, if I was, I could. I can't really define it because I can't really put it into words. But I would say that. I mean, just simply that there is a force, a spirit, a power greater than myself, and that I am protected, and that everything, you know, comes in perfect timing, even if it seems horrible at the time. So I, you know, believe in divine order, and you know, in a power, in an intelligence and a power greater than myself. And I think that was proven to me. I mean, I always sort of had that. I grew up Southern Baptist, and I didn't believe in the whole God, you know, the beard and, you know, pearly gates thing. But I did always think that there was something. And it just took a lot of searching, and I read a lot of books on the Dalai Lama and researched a lot of the schools of Buddhism, which the philosophy made a lot of sense to me. And, you know, and then found Soka Gakkai, which is a group that supports the Nichiren Buddhists all over the world. And you know, so I do that, but I also have, you know, other beliefs too. I think it's all very individual, and I think it should be.
Well, now that you've kind of opened a new door by writing a memoir, I mean, I guess you only have one life to discuss, but do you think you might write some more?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, God, it was hard. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. There's been interest in me doing, you know, a book about my life in India, which would be really fun for me to do, and maybe I'll do that, because it is, you know, my life is more exciting now than it ever has been, even without all the, you know, number one hits and stuff. I'm just in such a better place, and life is so much more fun.
The book is called Lips Unsealed, and the author, the marvelous and beautiful and wonderful Belinda Carlisle.
Oh, and I love that.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and you can like us on Facebook. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas and Ollie Jackson. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.